The Creative Business Podcast is brought to you by Noosey. Online proposals made simple for creative businesses. Visit noosey.com to learn how your business can start winning more projects today.
Hello and welcome to episode 3 of season 1 of the Creative Business Podcast, the podcast that aims to help you build a better, more successful creative business. Starting a freelance career can be a daunting prospect, to say the least. And I think sometimes to sort of counter that sense of trepidation and fear of beginning this career, most of us begin working locally. You start with the area you know, you put feelers out, friends of friends, family members, and that can keep us going for a good long while. In fact, some freelancers, some agencies, some studios build their entire careers out of working locally. And that's great. You know, that can be fantastic. But I think this probably applies more so to freelancers, perhaps. You know, a lot of us, after a certain amount of time of working in that local sphere, we want something a little more. We want to be able to put the feelers out a little further and work with clients who perhaps aren't in our local catchment area. We aspire to work remotely. That's what today's show is about, you know, working remotely with those dream clients. And it can be a tricky move to make from working locally to working remotely, but it can most certainly be done. It's something that I did myself. You know, I, like many freelancers, started out working locally. But in fact, the day I began as a freelancer, literally going from door to door, in my case, bar to bar, the Irish bars, in Madrid, Spain. But I think once you start gaining experience, once you start gaining momentum, your prices start to increase. You know, I do think that you do look for that different, perhaps, type of client. And, you know, we have certain questions. You know, how can I attract these clients from other areas, from other countries? You know, how can they find me? How can I work efficiently? You know, how can we deal with time zones? How can we even deal with payments, you know? So this week I talked to Laura Williams. Laura is a designer, a speaker, and a digital strategist. So we sat down and Laura basically gave me all her secrets. She told me how she manages to successfully run a business remotely. So let's jump into the interview and be sure to hang around till the end as well, because Laura's set up a nice little offer for all our Creative Business Podcast listeners. So hi, Laura. Thanks for joining me today. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very good. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
A pleasure. So first off, you know, we're here to talk about remote working. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of us, certainly those who have been in the industry for a while, tend to equate remote working with you know, cheap outsourcing to countries that we perhaps receive emails from on a daily basis. Is that the case? Is remote working outsourcing or...?
Yeah, well, I think there is a bit of a stigma attached to remote working. And that's that, as you've said, you're kind of just looking to outsource maybe a low quality service at the lowest possible price. But I do think that's changing now. It's becoming way more popular and it's becoming a lot more accepted. The thing I like most about remote working is that you're not restricted to clients who are just in your local area. So you can have clients from anywhere in the world and you can work on projects that are really suited to you. And in the same way, clients are not restricted to working with freelancers who are just in their city. So they can kind of have their pick of a much larger talent pool, if you like. So
mm-hmm. Because I think many of us, myself included, they sort of start out with that local work, don't they? Seems to be the easiest way to go, especially when you are sort of, you know, at the very beginnings of your career and you don't necessarily have that online presence. You know, so for someone perhaps who was looking to start with that remote work, you know, how would they sort of make the step from local clients to, you know, being on a worldwide stage, so to speak?
I would say that the most important tool is going to be your website. And I see quite a lot of freelancers who have really good looking portfolio websites, but they don't actually mention that you can hire them. So if you're a designer, maybe you just have really beautiful images of your work. If you're a developer, you might have what kind of coding languages you use. So I'd say the most important thing is to just have a look at your website and try to give it a really clear call to action that says, yes, I'm available to hire. This is how you get in touch with me, whether it's a briefing form or whether you have a link to set up a time to call you with like Calendly or something like that, and just kind of make your website show that you can work remotely. And you can have things like, I always like seeing frequently asked questions on websites, because mm-hmm. there's a lot of clients, especially if they are unsure about how the process might work. You can have little question and answers that kind of say, this is how it's going to work when we work together. And you can even say, you know, something like, yes, we might work remotely, but we can do everything on Skype and everything like that. So
I actually remember a few years ago, I was setting up a productized service, and I was actually studying freelance and agency landing pages. And that was, I think that was probably the number one thing that was on my list of sort of, should we say, mistakes or errors. The impossibility of actually trying to contact some of these companies. They would do their best to hide their contact details, or they wouldn't have a call to action. That just, like you said, there just wouldn't be anything there. It just seems like, I think for designers as well, especially, you know, we like to make things look great. And sometimes we do forget, you know, that people actually have to be able to contact us.
Yeah, exactly. And if you just kind of, a lot of people will just have maybe a contact page where it just has your phone number or maybe an email address or something like that. But it doesn't really tell you what to contact them about. You know, it's so much better to have maybe a kind of briefing form or something that kind of shows that this is, if you want to get started with a project, you could even have maybe like a start a project button, and it can take you through the steps. Here's step one, here's step two, step three, how we can get things going, so that you're not just kind of letting the client do the hard work and try to figure out how the process is meant to work, because some of them have maybe never done this before, and they kind of want you to guide them in that way.
That all sounds very formal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it can be.
No, but I think that's great. I think, you know, when you're sort of laying things out so that the client, you know, as you say, doesn't have to think about it, doesn't have to think of perhaps of what is expected, because you're right. You know, a lot of oftentimes the client is a first time client, shall we say, you know, for design services.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, you know, if we've got these perhaps freelance consultancies or smaller agencies that have started out with the local clients, you know, started out with local work, and you can do, you know, you can run a great business off of local work, but as you said, it does limit you as well into sort of the companies that you can reach out to, the companies that can reach out to you, etc. But I think, you know, once you make that jump and once you make that step to try and work with, should we say, international clients, it becomes more difficult, right? Because they have to be able to trust you. They don't know you, you know, they can't meet you in person, shall we say. How do you go about establishing trust, you know, just with someone or with a company who is perhaps on the other side of the world?
Yeah. And to be honest, this is the trickiest thing. This is the biggest hurdle that I had when I first started working remotely. And it's a thing that a lot of people have brought up, in the sense that they sometimes, if you're investing in a project and you're investing in a person, you might be investing quite a lot of money. So you are going to want to know that this person is credible. They're not just going to take your money and run, you know? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people really, really like having face-to-face time. They really just want a meeting to just make sure that you're who you say you are, and that you can do the job. So it is challenging, but you can absolutely do it. You just need, there are four main things really. So you need to show that you are credible. And these are all things like your portfolio. So it's all stuff that everyone will be doing anyway. So portfolio, any guest posting that you do, any way that you're showing that you're kind of an authority in your industry, any social media stuff as well, especially if you've got your face as your avatar, can really help. So people, you know you're a real person. You need to be able to show that you're reliable. So you answer emails promptly, whether that's, you know, at set times a day, just make that really clear. You need to, there's intimacy as well. So people need to feel like they can talk to you. And a lot of clients I find who hire not only me, but a lot of other freelancers that I speak to, say that they hired them because they just felt really comfortable around them, and that they knew that this project was going to be, they're going to have a great time working on it. And then the last thing would just be, you actually come across as more trustworthy the less you talk about yourself. So I'd say let your portfolio and your past work and testimonials speak for you, and really try to focus the conversation on your client and what you're going to do for them, and make sure that you're really getting across the point that you understand what problems they're facing and stuff like that. And that can all really help with trust. And in the end, it shouldn't really matter that you're on the other side of the world, and they should be able to see that. It just can be a bit of a hurdle at the start.
Okay. Because, I mean, you know, and everybody that works in our industry knows that the creative the creative forces have been given, you know, a bad name sometimes by a few rotten eggs, should we say, you know, for being unreliable. Basically, the biggest sort of worry with any potential client is reliability. They need to know that you, the designer or the developer, are going to turn up, they're going to do the work, you're going to hand it over, you know, and for all those sort of failed cases, those failed scenarios, it makes it harder for people like you to sell your services. So, I mean, so what are some of those ways that you can establish yourself as reliable? I mean, you mentioned briefly there on the credibility, reliability, and intimacy, but how would you actually push that sort of, you know, I am reliable, you can trust me?
So I'd say the main thing would be to, in the very first meeting that you have with your client, just set the expectations for communication as early on as possible. So make it really clear to your clients how they can contact you, whether that's via email or whether you want to set up maybe a Slack group for them. It's completely up to you how you want to do it. But just make it really clear. Maybe you prefer phone calls, maybe you prefer Skype calls. And the other thing I would say is I found probably the most useful thing for me is to set up a repeating Skype call, a repeating progress call, if you like. So every week, once you've started a project, and you can say this in the first meeting that this is what you'll do, and clients really, I find, really respond well to it, is at the same time every week, you're going to have a call and you're just going to talk about what you've been working on the previous week, what you're going to be working on the next week, and go through any questions that they've had, any problems that you've run into, anything that you need from them or that they need from you. And you'll find that just them having this repeating event in their calendar will really put their minds at ease, knowing that they're going to speak to you once a week. You're not just going to completely go off the radar, which is a massive worry for a lot of clients.
So you don't just turn up at the end with the project ready to go and say, ta-da, here you are.
Exactly, which can be really tempting to do. I know what it's like to want to just go into your cave and just kind of do it and get into the zone and everything. But from the client's point of view, it's good to keep in touch.
Yeah, I remember I think that was probably the biggest sort of breakthrough I ever had in my freelance career, was the fact that once I realized that you could set up these regular meetings, like progress meetings or however you'd like to call them, everything changed for me. Everything. I think it really was the biggest sort of turning point. And yeah. In the beginning, I hated them because I was a freelancer. I didn't like talking to people. And I didn't enjoy doing those meetings at all. But then once you do a few and you start getting more and more comfortable, I remember them actually becoming almost the favorite part of the project for me, because you could then sort of say, you know, this is where I am, this is what I've done, you know, sort of get feedback and get things, as you were saying, you know, things that you need to back from them as well. And I remember it being, it was probably the biggest game changer for me.
Yeah, it really is. And as you say, it can be really enjoyable. And clients as well, like sometimes I found that clients have actually rehired me and they've kind of said, it's because they've missed our like weekly progress calls. They kind of become like such a big part of your life, and you're like, now the project's over, it's kind of like, oh, I'm gonna miss these. Then they're kind of like, what else? What other work can I give you? You know, so it can be really good, and it can make you really, really memorable. So you're not just another just another name in their inbox. You know, you're a real person that they want to talk to and engage with.
Yeah, and you already mentioned that whole thing about creating that sort of relationship, that sense of intimacy. And from both sides, from both hiring and being hired, you do always tend to veer towards that person that you obviously feel some kind of affinity to, whether, you know, they just, you like the way they are or the way they work or the relationship, just the way that you can talk to each other, the way you even get on, you know. I think a lot of people are hired on that alone. You know, we talk about sort of creating a vibe. We talk about that a lot as well in our proposals, you know, sort of using language and speaking to people the way that you would speak to them, instead of using all this, you know, fancy language and things. So, I mean, what are some of the ways, you know, in which you sort of begin to create a sense of intimacy with potential new clients? I'm guessing like the client call is a big part of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. And I'd say, so there's a really great quote from someone called Renee Siegel, who basically just says, customers want to work with someone they can relate to, not just buy from. And I think that's really important. You can really sell yourself as kind of a really great asset to the project. And the thing that I would recommend is just if you've decided that, yes, this is a project that you want to work on, just try to get on a really informal video call as early on as possible with a client. So you really want to get yourself out of their inbox, because when you're in their inbox, you're just like another name and you're kind of a bit faceless. If you can just set up a call with them, and it really needs to be video, I find. And this is something that I didn't used to do. So I used to be terrified of video calls. I would just hide behind my computer. I'd get really, really nervous. I'd hide behind my computer screen. I'd keep the video off and just have a voice call. and even that I really didn't like. I was so, so shy, and I still kind of am in a way. But I found if you can see their face and they can see your face, you can, you know, share a few laughs with each other, and just, it just kind of creates that, you know, sense of intimacy that they wouldn't have just with reading like a text document. So I would say just try to get them on a video call, and it's actually less scary. So video for me is now less scary than a voice call, because you can read their expressions, you can read their kind of body language, and it's, you don't feel the need to fill every single gap with, you know, with just kind of babble, really. So that's the absolute best way that I've found. And actually, since I started doing video calls, I pretty much got every project that I've sent a proposal for. Mm-hmm. Every proposal has been accepted since I've done video calls. So it's kind of had a 100% success rate. When I was just doing voice, or when I was just doing email especially, you know, it was kind of low. But yeah, video, I'm pretty sure that's what's kind of changed it.
Yeah, I think email for sort of forming a relationship is probably the worst way to go. Mm-hmm. You can't inject any sense of intimacy. You know, you might as well just be using a questionnaire. And we've talked about this a lot as well with client interviews. I think it's, you know, if you want to really, really increase those close rates on your projects, then yeah, a video call is the absolute way to go. And mm-hmm. I'm glad to hear that it's had such a great impact on your work. You actually mentioned there, you said, you know, if you decide that this is the kind of person you want to work with, then, you know, to get on a video call as soon as possible. So if we could just take a step back, I mean, a lot of people will probably be thinking, well, what steps do you put in place to make sure that is a, you know, a customer you want to be working with in the first place? Do you have any sort of screening process or anything you sort of, I know, because you're big into your processes as well. So is there anything you put in place before they get to that call?
Yeah, so basically what I do is I do actually use questionnaires mm-hmm. to kind of figure out if this is someone that I want to work with. So from my website, you can kind of go on and you can email me about a project, and I just have a very, very simple thing that just tells me a very, very brief summary of the project. And if it kind of sounds interesting, I'll send them a couple of questionnaires to fill in. And that's really helpful, because the worst thing that you can do really is to just jump on a call with anyone, because you might find even the most exciting project, they might have just no budget or something. You know, you really need to find out whether A, this is something that you want to do, and B, this is something that you can afford to take on. So I think that kind of screening is really, really important. And then if both those boxes are ticked, then yeah, I would absolutely just jump on a Skype call.
So do you ask for the client's budget in one of these questionnaires before jumping on a call?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What is me pushing now? So what happens if they don't, or not comfortable giving out the budget before a call? Do you just refuse to take a call then in that case, or would you, just depending on perhaps the client or the work, which way would you go with that?
To be honest, it kind of depends how busy I am at that point. If it sounds like something that I really do want to work on. And I completely understand clients not knowing their budget. I mean, I've been in situations where I've hired people and I've not had a clue how much this kind of thing costs. And you, from the client's point of view, sometimes they don't want to offend you by going too low, but they just don't have a clue. So you can kind of give them ballpark figures and say, look, every project is different, but if you've done it for long enough, you will start to notice these patterns where you say, you know, something like if you're doing a website, maybe an e-commerce website with X amount of products and these kind of features, is you're looking at roughly this. And at least they can then get a kind of ballpark figure. Or you can just say things like, are we talking 5,000? Are we talking 50,000? Are we talking 500,000? You know, and then if you give them these really long ranges, they'll pick somewhere. You know, they'll probably say something like, oh, okay, I was thinking more, you know, 5 or 10,000, you know, not 500,000. So at least it gets you somewhere, you know.
Okay. Well, that's good to hear that those questions go out beforehand, because I think while some people, you know, are sort of keen to jump on the project, obviously they want to bring in as much work as they can. Sometimes they do it without asking these questions, you know, and end up wasting an awful lot of time because they don't do any kind of screening, you know.
Yeah. And I was really nervous about asking that question. And to be honest, a lot of people still don't answer it. And I do have to kind of push them a little bit further. But it's worth doing it just because there is nothing worse than spending a lot of time talking with someone and getting to know them and maybe getting a bit excited about the project and then realizing that they just have no budget and it's just been a complete waste of time, or they were hoping that you could do some kind of exchange with them, you know, and then you've just wasted all this time. And yeah, it can really suck.
We're back and forth all the time on this. So, you've gone from email to forms to a call. Obviously, like, communication makes up, 100% of that entire process. So it's obviously incredibly important to any project, you know, and especially a remote one. How do you handle this sort of communication, you know, with clients who are perhaps on a different time zone? Because it can be difficult, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really can be. And the best thing that I found is if you use something, when you schedule a call, don't do the whole back and forth. Oh, when are you free? I'm free this time, my time, and this time, your time, because you can get wires crossed and stuff. I would use something like Calendly or You Can Book Me, which I'll have like a link to at the end, which I'll give out to everybody. And you can... And that will basically work out your time zones for you. So it will only give them times that you are available. So you'll set your availability. If you work 9 to 5 or however you work, they'll only see the relevant times in their time zone. So that's really, really helpful. And then once you've got this recurring Skype call set up, the progress call, you'll probably find that you don't really need to communicate too much with them, because if it's recurring, if it's on the same day at the same time every week, you're never going to have to go through that process again, right? It's just a meeting that's already pre-booked in your calendar. So you won't have to worry about that, and you won't have to deal with time zones. And then the other thing would be, you'd also be using email a lot, which obviously you can email at any time, day or night. It's not really time zone specific. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that can really help as well.
I saw actually in your presentation that from the talk you did at the DYFC conference, that your email process, and you have it pretty nailed down, don't you? I mean, I don't know what tools you were using or whether it was just sort of text expanders, but you seem to have it pretty dialed in. Can you talk a little bit about how you sort of make the best use of email?
Yeah, sure. So I actually do email maybe slightly differently. I try to really over communicate in emails because I really don't like a lot of back and forth. So if a client asks me something, I'll try to give them all the information that they might need in that email. And I'll do things like I'll format an email. So you'll have things that are in bold, you'll have links that are kind of directly into the text. And I'm not trying to make a beautiful email, but I really want every email to be really easy to refer back to. So if they do a search for all the emails, they will have all the information that they need. And I use a bit of software called Atext, which is essentially Text Expander, but it's like $5 instead of I think it's gone to a monthly payment now, Text Expander, so it can get kind of expensive. But Atext is perfect, and it does everything that Text Expander does. So you can just type in a little snippet, and then it will paste in a pre-written email that you've already done, and it will give you text boxes so you can just put in any variables like their name or something like that. And that it saves so much time, and clients really like it as well, because they always feel like, when they email you, they know that you're going to answer their question and go kind of above and beyond, and you're going to give them everything that they need in that one email. So I find that it sounds like it takes a lot of time to do, but it really, really doesn't. It actually takes me a lot less time overall, because if I put the effort into that initial email, I'm saving on so much back and forth. And when you're across time zones, especially, back and forth can take days, you know?
Yeah. So with all these sort of forms of communication, obviously you're having to be super organized. And I, like I mentioned, I saw some of this in the slides from your presentation. So what are some of the kinds of processes that you have in place, like to make sure that you stay sane and your client stays happy?
So one of the main things that I would recommend doing, because I think this is going to be different for everybody, is to try to write out your client experience. And Marie Polin, I think that's how you pronounce her name, has a really, really good post about it. So if you just Google like Marie Polin experience, and it should just come up right at the top, what you would basically do is just write out a client experience from start to finish. So the first moment they get in contact with you, right, when whether that's through your website, what happens then? You schedule a call, and then you just go step by step every, and try to be as detailed as possible, every little thing that happens. And that is really helpful to look back on, because you can then look back on that and see, hey, is there anything that I'm basically just repeating a lot of work on? Can I automate any of this? Can I create something once? Am I answering a lot of the same questions? Can I create something like a welcome pack, or any templates that I can reuse for each new client? And you can really have a solid process involved. And what I like to do is I like to have what I call an experience checklist, where I'll write out all the different points, because I like to put little details in each project I do. So little kind of surprises along the way, like I might send them.
for you or for the client?
For the client.
Right, okay.
So I'd send them like, so at the start of a project, if I need them to write content, which is notoriously difficult to get a client mm-hmm. to do, I'll send them like a gift card for like a Starbucks or Costa Coffee or something like that. And that's something that I got from Lauren Hooker from Ellen Company. She does that. And basically it just kind of, it's just these little things that kind of make the process just a bit more fun for them, and they're not expecting it. And it's just kind of nice to do. But when I've got loads of work on, I kind of forget all these things. So if I put these into an experience checklist, I can literally just, I have it on my desk next to me, and I can just tick it off as I've done it. And I know where I am for each project, what I need to do next. And I find that really, really helpful.
That sounds amazing, because I was always the sort of the stereotypical freelancer who was sort of running by the seat of my pants, shall we say. You know, it wasn't particularly organized. So I think I love the idea of having these processes in place and all these little pieces of software, shall we say, to help with those emails and going backwards and forwards. I think possibly the only thing you've mentioned so far that I did well in was, I think, the whole sort of video calls, the video conferences. I think those were perhaps the only area that I excelled in of all the areas you've mentioned. But it did help to create that vibe, you know, and as we said, that's essential. And you've also mentioned several times now about the sort of the experience checklist, the client's experience, and that's what maybe not knowingly always a lot of clients buy into, right? So how can we, what are some of the ways? I mean, you mentioned some of these little free gifts, which I think is an awesome idea, go and buy yourself a coffee and write that content you owe me. What are some of these other sort of elements of having a great experience perhaps that we could incorporate into our upcoming projects?
I mean, I think it's really going to be the little things for remote workers that can make a big difference. So the difficulty I found was when I used to work in a design agency, we would have our clients come in for these crazy meeting. They were these like marathon meeting things, and they would honestly last like half a day at least. And they'd come in and we'd make them all these really nice, we'd make it like a spread of food and drink and all this stuff. And the whole thing would be completely pointless. We wouldn't really get much work done, but the clients really loved coming in and getting almost pampered in a way. and that was like a big part of why they would choose to hire this particular agency, because they knew how to do all this stuff. They knew
you
that
had
it would...
better sandwiches.
Exactly, because we had better sandwiches. And I can't give my clients sandwiches when they're halfway across the world, unfortunately. So I think stuff that you can do, like sending them gifts. And other people, like I know Robert Williams, he will send like bags of coffee just at the start. Just he calls them like coding fuel or something like that. Or I think Nick D, can't pronounce his last name, unfortunately. he will send them books at Christmas or something, and just stuff that they think that they'll like. And it's not all about what you buy them, it's not all about spending loads of money on them, but it's just kind of these little thoughts that you can do that really make a good experience. And one other thing that I really like to do, which is really, really handy for remote workers, is to give each new client I get when I onboard them, I give them their own kind of client area on my website. And mm-hmm. So basically what will happen is I'll give them a link and I'll give them a login, and they'll just have all the assets for everything that they need just ready for them in this area on the website. So if they're looking for, it can be, you can put the proposal in there, you can put the contract in there, and then you can put all the project assets. So if you're making a logo for them, you can put all the different logo files, and it means that they're not going to be emailing you at like, you know, midnight or something saying, oh, we really need our logo to send to a printer. Where is it? Can you resend it to us? Because they'll have everything there on the website waiting for them, which is really, really handy when you work remotely and you might not be able to always answer them straight away. So just giving them somewhere that they can check up on progress of work and see where everything is. And it's really useful as well because it will all be custom branded to you. Mm-hmm. So if you're using a lot of different software, then everything's all going to maybe be branded slightly differently. But if you just organize it all in this one page on your website and it only needs to be really, really simple, then they've got everything there that they need. And it all looks like it looks kind of really slick because it's all a part of your brand and stuff like that.
No, so. I actually had a sneak peek at this as well. So I can say that it looks very impressive. It's very slick looking. I was going to ask you actually, is this something that you had built yourself or is this something that you've bought from outside?
So it's something that I built myself and I'm actually going to, I've kind of packaged it up. So if anyone wants to use it, I'm giving it away to anyone who's listening to the podcast. I'll give the link at the end.
Oh, wow. That's very kind of you.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, it's really, really simple. It's just a very simple page and you can just, it means you can just start using it straight away. And it's very easy to implement because all you have to do is just put different links to all your different bits and pieces that you've got. And it takes maybe 20 minutes to set up or something for each new client. So it's really helpful, I find.
Well, you say it's simple, but it looks fantastic. And I think it's going to help anybody sort of up their client game because it's definitely going to sort of give a fantastic impression, I think, especially when it comes to organization. So yeah, that would be awesome. Great to get a link in the show notes here. Any closing thoughts on how people who are sort of maybe working remotely now or looking to get into remote work, sort of how they can up their game or take it to the next level?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, all I would say is just try to bear in mind the three main challenges that remote workers have, which is trust, like we mentioned at the start, logistics and the experience. So if you can establish trust with your client from the very beginning and just ease any of the worries of working remotely, you will do absolutely fine. You know, you'll do great. And then just make sure you have systems in place to try to automate as much of the process as possible, because this is a really big advantage that remote workers have. Because if you're working in person with someone, you can't really automate because everything has to be done specifically for them because they're in person, right? But mm-hmm. when you're working remotely, you know, emails can be just be pasted in, documents can be kind of resent. So that's really, really helpful. And then just try to give your clients a really good experience working with you so they remember you and hopefully they come back to you and they'll recommend you. And that's pretty much all there is to it.
So, I mean, we're going to link up to this, to your client private area anyway, so people can already get a glance and see what you're doing. But if people want to sort of maybe go and follow you or check out what you're doing online, is there anywhere in particular where people can find you?
Yeah. So they can find me on Twitter, which is at Laurium, which is LAURIUM. You can find my website at lauraelizabeth.co, which has kind of just got all my different projects and stuff, everything on there. So yeah, that's pretty much it.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today, Laura. I appreciate taking time out of your work day.
No problem. Had a great time.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Laura. Have a great day.
Thank you, Angie. Bye. Right.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Laura. I think there's some fantastically useful advice in there. And one thing I would actually recommend before you disappear is to go and check out Laura's website that she mentioned. It's laurium.co.uk. Because if you're actually ever looking to hire a designer, she has a fantastic resource called, if you actually just go to the website and click on New Start Here, she essentially has a mini online book, which is getting design work done without losing your mind. And it's done in mini chapters on how to find a designer, how to evaluate a portfolio, your own personal role in the project, what to do if you're not happy, etc. It truly is a fantastic resource. And of course, as well, be sure to check out that freebie that she's given away for you listeners, which is essentially, you know, your own private client area that you can, where you can attach all relevant data, documentation, designs for any projects that you're working on with your clients. So if you're enjoying the interviews, I'd love to ask that you take 1 second to head over to iTunes and leave a 5-star review for us. You know, this helps us get more visibility. It also means that you don't miss out on an episode. The more people listen to the show, the more motivated we are to keep pushing forward this. Okay, so I hope you have a great week. We'll be back the same time next week. Good luck and see you soon.